Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I don't even know how to introduce. I want you to you'll speak from the heart as you always do, and
listen, it's just it's different watching. I guess it's different watching on TV than being there and getting caught up in the atmosphere and the excitement, you know. So I'm just talking and looking at it as just another outsider. Let's put it that way. But listen, I don't want to put a damper on things or anything, but you know, to me, this was not true horse racing, at least as I know it. And I will say that the grass races were all good. I have no problem with that. But after that, a lot of things that just get ugly for me. You know, I don't want to see horses and jockeys coming back on a track labeled fast, looking like they've just been rolling in a sandbox. I realize they were being zealous in their attempt to make the track safe, which is understandable. But in my opinion, they did it at the expense of the racing. Who says you have to make a track excessively deep and tiring to make it safe? I mean, there are faster racetracks. You know, I go back and look at the Aqueduct over the years and Hialeah. Even the old Santa Anita track was always safe. Saratoga. I mean, these were basically safe racetracks. You know, so what's going on now, I can understand, but sometimes you can overdo something. And, you know, and as much as I like Vino Rosso in the Classic and, you know, won all kinds of bets on him, to tell you the truth, I can never watch that race again for obvious reasons. It just hurts too much, because I actually liked Mongolian Groom a lot and actually thought at one point in the race that he looked like he was going to finish in the money. But, you know, all the repercussions of that, which I think most of it is just nonsensical. In fact, I just read somewhere that, the vet came out and the trainer came out and said that the horse was perfectly sound. You know, and I understand these things happening. There's absolutely no blame here at all. It's just the fact that it happened, that it hurts just like it's hurt from all the other incidents. You know, fatal incidents in the past. And, you know, I go back, I was there for Ruffian. I was there for Gopher Wand. I was there for Prairie Bayou. I mean, I was there for a lot of them. I've witnessed this. And every time you go through it, it takes a little bit out of you. And, you know, I just got attached to Mongolian Groom, not only from a betting standpoint, but I just like the connections and,
sure.
The horrible irony of it is the fact that, you know, right after the race, he stated emphatically that they're not going, that they don't want to put up $200,000. And then you figure some offers would come in to get a piece of it and put up the supplementary fee. And they said, you know, no, they decided to change their mind and put up the money. And then this happened. So, you know, I know how absolutely devastated everybody was there. But that's not even what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the Breeders' Cup. You know, first off, I just don't want to see the best distance horses in the country stagger home the last half a mile in 52 seconds. That's not racehorse time. You can make these tracks slower and slower and slower. But it was weird because the formula was the same all day. They were going fast early. It looked legitimate. The sprint races were run fast. But, I mean, to come home the last half in 52, I mean, mm-hmm. that's ridiculous. And, you know, it wasn't that the horses were bad. It was at the racetrack, you know, that they poured truckloads of sand on the day before the Breeders' Cup. You know, and speaking of the Classic and that racetrack, I certainly don't want to see the two best closers in the country never even pick up their feet and get beat 15 lengths and 17 lengths like they're running through quicksand. And I had agreed with Chuck McGahee's original plan to skip the Breeders' Cup and was totally against it when they changed their mind. I knew the odds were stacked against them, being a three-year-old shipping west. I quoted that statistic that they were 0 for 22 in the past, and especially with the track favoring speed at that time. And I had no idea that it would get even worse for him when he got there. And I don't think Shug did either. I think he was kind of surprised how that track was playing, how deep it was, and how come-from-behind horses were just spinning their wheels the whole way. So you don't want to see that. You know, you just don't want to see any kind of track bias when you've got the championships at stake. I mean, there was a lot at stake for Code of Honor. But, you know, so now he's got to, end his campaign very ingloriously. But, you know, that's just the beginning. You look at Omaha Beach. I mean, I don't want to see arguably the most exciting and talked about horse in the entire Breeders' Cup, who's been on or just off the pace, going 6 furlongs to a mile and an eighth in every one of his starts, 8.5 lengths back at the half mile call of the dirt mile, and still 5 lengths back at the eighth pole. You know, he still runs one of the best races of his life, despite the track. And he can't even get close to, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from Spun to Run, but he can't even get close to that horse, you know, who was beaten 9 lengths in the Haskell, who I was at Parks when he beat Grey Magician by a head in the Smarty Jones. You know, he ran well in the Pennsylvania Derby, but he's still fifth. And then suddenly turned into a superstar overnight. He gets a 110 buyer in some small stakes at Parks, despite never having run a triple-digit buyer in his life. So, I mean, for Omaha Beach, I mean, not even to get close to that horse and to come from that far out of it. And where the heck was Cold Front? You know, in 12 career starts, he's either been on the lead or within a length of the lead in every start. In the Met Mile, he's on the lead in 44-1 for the half. But in this race, he's running fifth, 6.5 lengths off the lead. I mean, I don't get that. Where was he? So, I mean, he's fun to run. As soon as he went out there, you know, and opened up 2-3 lengths, he said, nobody's going to catch this horse on this racetrack. And like I said, I thought the Omaha Beach ran a terrific race to get second. And even staying with the dirt mile, yeah, I don't want to see the second and third choices. You look at Improbable and Mr. Money, who were both being very highly touted by their trainers and many of the experts, and who were training brilliantly, just swimming out there and never picking their feet up. And they got beat 9 and 10 3/4 lengths. You know, now you get to Midnight Bisou. I don't want to see the best filly in the country unable to make up an inch of ground in the last eighth of a mile with a final 3/8 run and a tick under 40 seconds. You know, what in the world was she doing running eighth at the top of the stretch? You know, I mean, you could say was it a bad ride? Was it just bad racing luck? Was it the bad track? I mean, take your pick, but that filly's not supposed to be that far back. And if you watch the race, you could see Blue Prize, who, you know, give her credit. You know, she's the only horse to come from off the pace, but she had to make her move on the backstretch, and it had the lead already at the eighth pole. You know, and then, you know, finally you look at Friday. Now, I don't want to see a race with two of the strongest Derby prospects seen in years completely fall apart. You have a 45-1 shot, a 28-1 shot, and a 39-1 shot come from first, third, and fourth to finish 1-2-3, and the 3-2 shot running second stops to a walk, getting beat over 12 lengths. You know, and then, you know, meanwhile, you know, the 4-5 shot in the race stumbles at the start and finishes dead last. So to me, that race was a total bust. In fact, to tell you the truth, by the way, if somebody had told me, you know, a week before the Breeders' Cup that we were going to see the Derby favorite last weekend, and it would not be any of the three favorites, nor would it be Scabbard, nor anybody else in the juvenile, but it would be the winner of the Nashua Stakes the next day, who was by far and away the most impressive 2-year-old, maybe the most impressive horse seen all weekend. And then you go to the other dirt race on Friday, the juvenile fillies. You know, we have two brilliant fillies coming off of dominating wins, literally staggering home rubber-legged in an agonizing slow 27-3 and 7-2 for the last 16th of a mile. I didn't think racehorses could run that slow. So to me, you know, this Breeders' Cup was just one I'm going to forget very quickly. Let's put it this way. I would have forgotten about it by now if I didn't have to talk about it here. You know, I'm sure you and a lot of other people feel I'm being too harsh, but what can I do? I mean, it's just the way I feel. You know, maybe it's just I've got too many races behind me.
No, yeah, it's valuable perspective.
I had a knee-jerk reaction, column after the juvenile, which, you know, like I said, was knee-jerk and probably made more of it than it was about. You know, about the reaction afterwards. But you know, it's not that I didn't write a recap on Saturday's races out of protest or anything. I thought about it. I had nothing to write about. There was absolutely nothing. The only thing I could have written about is what I just said now, and I don't want to go there. You know, I'll leave it confined to here. I'm not going to put it on a Blood Horse website, or, you know, the negative, at least in my opinion, the negative aspects of the Breeders' Cup. But I started looking at all the races, and I said, you know, what am I going to write about? I'm going to write about, I don't know what, Spun to Run, or Blue Prize, or there was nothing that really inspired me to write anything. So basically, what I did is I sent in I reprinted my column of 10 years ago of Zenyatta's recap, because today is the 10th anniversary of that race. So yeah, I touched it up a little bit and I sent it in, and you know, see if they run it. So just so I'll have something, but. You know, when you're writing a column about something, you know, as a writer, you know, you're a writer too. You don't want to have to force anything. If you don't believe in something, and you're forced to write about it, it's not like I was assigned to cover a race and have to make the most of it.
Right.
I'm concentrating on one race, but here are 14 races, and I went through every one of them, and you know, and I said, what we're going to write about. You know, I mean, I guess I could write about Peter Miller, who's to me has become one of the best Breeders' Cup trainers ever. Between his repeats and his 1-2 finishes, especially in the turf sprint, you know, he's done some remarkable things in the Breeders' Cup. But I just couldn't come up, couldn't come up with anything. So I'm not going to force it.
Yeah, and that's nothing wrong with that. And certainly the 10-year anniversary of Zenyatta was a big part of the lead up and the backdrop to the weekend. In fact, the cover, I don't know, did you see the cover of the program?
No. I'm sure it was.
She was on the cover?
I could see. I can certainly see that. But, you know, things, I went back and I reread it. You know, I said, do I want to reprint this or not? I reread it, and boy, did it bring back memories. Wow, I'll tell you, that was quite, I just wanted to write something positive that wasn't forced. And there was just nothing, I'm not going to write a whole, column on the track. And like I said in the beginning, I'm not there, so I didn't get caught up in the whole atmosphere of it, all the excitement and the, And being around all the winners and seeing all the hugging and the kissing and everything like that. Yeah, you see that and you get caught up with it. So, you know, I saw all the photos that you posted, you know, and I could see that, you know, how you would get caught up with that, you know, because you're right down there with everybody and you sing all the emotion. You know, I don't see that. I just see the races for the way I see it and the way they're run. But yeah, I just felt so badly for. I know it sounds stupid, but I just felt so badly for Code of Honor and Yoshida. I mean, forgetting about Mongolian Groom, obviously that's in a different stratosphere. But I just felt so badly for these horses. I mean, listen, I know you like Yoshida, and Code of Honor. I figured, you know, listen, if he wasn't going to win, I know he was up against it. I said, maybe he can make the most of it and, you know, come flying home or something. And you know, maybe finish second or third, or maybe get beat a length or something like that. But to see both of those horses just floundering and just doing absolutely nothing, I said, it's just not true racing. And as I know it, I want to add that I know it.
No, I get it.
So
I brought it up.
I'm sure a lot of young people, they watch it and it's great and find it. Let's put it this way: don't get me wrong. If people come out and say, oh, I love this Breeders' Cup. The racing was great. It was exciting. I'm not going to argue with them. I mean, that's fine. You know, it's their opinion. And like I said, I thought the grass races were terrific. You know, I mean, I did fairly well. So it's not like a disgruntled bettor. I did very well on the classic. I actually bet a 5-horse trifecta box that I was so confident in. I bet the 5 horses in the race that had a race over the racetrack. I mean, it was as simple as that, you know. And I looked at the 5 horses and I said, "Yeah, these horses could run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in this race, the way this track is playing." You know, and the only horse that broke it up really was Elate, and I think one of the reasons why she did is that, you know, she won 2 runnings with the Delaware Handicap, which is probably the deepest racetrack in the country normally. And so, you know, to win the Delaware Handicap at 1.25 miles twice on that racetrack, you have to really like a deep, deep racetrack. So, you know, and then when I saw Blue Prize win, it certainly made her spinster look a lot better. So I said, I could see her sneaking in there, you know, on that racetrack. She was the only one that would have broken up my trifecta. Of course, I had United to win at 50-1, and I'm sitting there, for, you know, because you know I've got the 4 New Jersey Bets, you know, TVG account, and I'm sitting there. I'm saying, should I put him behind, you know, the favorite in the race?
Of course.
And I'm saying to myself, yeah, I should. I know there's a question about 1.5 miles. So I started to put the bet in. I said, you know what? If I do that, then maybe I should put Anthony Van Dyke in too. And then if I do that, I should put the Godolphin horse in too, because everybody was touting him and betting him. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to bother. I'll just go to win. And then when he got up and beat me in that at 50-1, I said, you are such a dummy. I mean, I consider myself a fairly decent handicapper, but I am the worst bettor there is. And I'm sitting there before the dirt mile, and I'm seeing the way the race is, you know, the way the track is. And then everybody on TV is talking about Spun to Run, and, you know, I'm start looking at the 110 buyer. I said, I don't know what's going on with this horse. I said, but, you know, maybe this horse is, I don't know, whatever's going on with him. I said, but maybe it's a totally different horse. And I'm looking at the odds. It was like 12, 13 to 1 or whatever it was. I'm looking, and I said, you know, should I just put a couple of bucks on him just for the heck of it to win? You know, all I needed was, you know, to win some of these races so I could have enough money to maybe extend my classic bets, because that's more what I'm interested in. So I'm just using the other races just to keep me going. But, you know, after having a bunch of losers, I did have Iridesa. That's one thing. So I had that. But, you know, I'm still down. And so I start looking, and I said, you know what? I mean, let me put a few bucks on this horse, just for the heck of it. I go and put a few bucks on it. It says, it's too late, betting is closed.
No.
So I get shut out. You know, the thing is, it's bad enough to get shut out at a mutual window, you know, when there was some lunatic in front of you, by the way, that's tying it up. But when you're sitting there with nobody in front of you, all you have to do is press a button that takes 1 second. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting. And I see, you know, they're getting towards the gate. They loaded that race so fast that by the time I pressed it, it says betting is closed. So when that race came in, you know, so between that and then blowing the exactor in the turf, and I bet Vasilica, I bet a bunch of Flavian Prats. You know, I've been following him all year. I've been doing columns on him all year, so I've been following him, and I have stormed the court. And the other Golden Gate Grass Horse, I have them second and third in all of my trifectas with 8 rings and Dennis's Moment on top. I didn't even think about betting Storm the Court to win, because I figured, I mean, one of those two horses has to win, right? I mean, they have to win. I mean, these are the Derby favorites. These are the super horses. And I said, if I'm going to bet a horse to win, you know, there were a few other horses I like. I thought Shoplifted would run well, or he's the other horse. I had 3 horses, second and third, underneath Keys. I had four horses second and four horses third, all of them on top of them. If they had run second or third, so if Eight Rings had won, I would have hit the trifecta with a 45-1 shot and a 28-1 shot. So, but I didn't bet to win. I didn't think they were good. They're good enough, and I didn't even realize. Again, it was bad handicapping on my part, but I didn't even realize because I didn't have the actual PPs. I just had the my original past performances, the lifetime past performances from the pre-entries. So I didn't have that. So I didn't know that they were putting blinkers on Storm the Court. But I saw that finish, and I said, "Oh, hey, what the?" What happened? I mean, between Maxfield being scratched and Dennis's moment stumbling at the start and finishing dead last, and Eight Rings for absolutely no reason at all, was coming off an 8.5 length victory on that racetrack, and in a perfect position early, just stopped to a walk. I said, my God, this race just absolutely fell apart, and it just left anybody to win that race. So it was like totally bizarre race. I said earlier, I had nothing to do with my bets. I won money on the day thanks to the classic, and I had a Redessa and I had a few almost. I just screwed things up. It had nothing to do with it. You know, it was strictly the results, the ridiculous final times. I'm an old fogey. I'm used to the horses of the 60s and 70s, where every good horse came home in 24 flat, no matter what, 23-4, whatever, no matter what the track was like. They came home. Nobody ever came home in 52. Nobody ever came home in 26 or last 16th and 7 and change. You know, 3/8 and 40 for the distaff. And horses can't close, off of those final fractions, and they can't make up an inch of ground. That's what I'm saying. I'm just not seeing racing the way I know it, or at least the way I remember it. So, you know, chalk it down to the old foginess in me.
The foginess factor. That somebody should name a factor.
The old fogey factor. Right?
The fogey exactly. factor.
The fogey factor. Well, that was me. I was the fogey factor. Everything you hear me rambling right now on my soapbox is the fogey factor. And, it's just the way it is. So, you know, when I hang up with you, that'll be the end of Breeders' Cup 2019. I won't give it another thought. So.
Well, then I'll tell you what. I'll make it easier on you. How astounded were you? And we brought it up, obviously, with Aaron Wellman on Tuesday. How far did your jaw drop watching?
Oh, my God. Independence Hall.
It was unbelievable.
I'll tell you one thing. I mean, Winstar's got a gem in his constitution. Oh my goodness! You know, and he. I like the horse too because his third dam is his third dam is by Damascus, which I always look for, of course. But I'm always happy for Mike Trumbetter, and I'm sure you are as well. But I tell you, between him and Spun to Run, it was a hell of a weekend for Parks. But I mean, I'm watching the race, and it was a good field, and he was right up there. Next thing you know, he's like five in front, and I said, "Whoa!" And he comes home in 24-2, and Aqueduct in the fall is generally not what you would call a blazing fast track. I mean, for this time of the year to run a mile at Aqueduct in 1:34.3. And run off by 12 and a quarter lengths or so. And, he's got the pedigree. He's got the pedigree to run all day. It's fascinating. I don't know how they got him. I know he was a $200,000 RNA. So obviously they got him, after the sale, whatever it was. I'm sure it was a bargain. But between this horse's first start, I know it was at Parks, but I mean, it's, his first thought was impressive as well, but this thing was just, like you said, jaw-dropping. I haven't given up on the two-year-olds. Tis the Law is the two-year-old champion, and I don't know what's going to happen in the Remsen. If this horse runs in the Remsen and wins like this, or if he runs in the Kentucky Jockey Club or any of those races, you certainly have to look at him. I'm not going to go with Storm the Court just because he won that crazy rendition of the Juvenile. We'll see if Eight Rings, rebounds Dennis's moment. I would imagine he might be out for the year, but if they do bring him back in the Kentucky Jockey Club, he still has a shot. But, you know, 'tis the law. You know, listen, I don't want anybody to forget his champagne. I mean, that was unbelievable. Both of his performances were extremely impressive. You know, and there's a few other horses that have come along. So I still think this is going to be a very good crop of 2-year-olds. And of course, Maxfield. We'll see what happens with him next year when he comes back. You know, he might have been the luckiest horse of them all for not running in this race.
Hmm.
The way that track was playing with his running style, I wouldn't want to see him just, run around the racetrack and do absolutely nothing like the other closers did. So it might have been the best thing for him not to run here.
That was a tough 24 hours for Brendan Walsh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to...
Oh, horrible. I mean, how unlucky can somebody get to bring two horses there and not be able to run either one of them?
Exactly.
I mean, he's such a nice guy, too. I mean, he's such a wonderful guy and a terrific trainer. You just feel bad. I heard you talking about, Flavian Pratt. Flavian Pratt finished in the money in 8 races.
9, I think. 1-4-4.
He had a 4th. But I don't know. I thought it was 8. But
still,
but you look
it's
at some
amazing.
Of the odds. He won the Juvenile. He was 2nd in the Turf at 50-1. He was 2nd in the Filly and Mare Turf, 2nd in the Filly and Mare Sprint, 3rd in the Distaff, 3rd in the Dirt Mile, 3rd in the Classic, 3rd in the Sprint, 4th in the Turf Sprint. And none of them were even close to being favorites. He had a couple of, Bellafina was bet down and Basilica was bet down to like 9-2 or something. That's the shortest prices he was on. So, obviously Ortiz, has the big Breeders' Cup by winning those races, but
Rosario too.
Look, Flavian Pratt. I mean, finishing the money in 8 Breeders' Cup races, or 9, whatever it is. Maybe I'm missing one.
Oh, I sent the thing. That was one of the things when Sunday morning, because you wake up so early, I'm just kind of going through the charts and thumbing through things, and here's the numbers. In 4 years, 38 starts, 3 wins, 6 seconds, 8 thirds, 4 fourths in 4 years.
That's amazing. And remember, if you're gonna advertise that, you could say that he finished on the board in all those races. People confuse on the board with in the money. In the money is the top 3 because they pay off 3 spots. On the board is the top 4 because the term comes from
the
first 4 finishes on the tote board. So when you say he finished on the board, that's the first 4. So for him to finish on the board and add up all those races you just said, that's pretty amazing.
That's what I thought, and that's what motivated it. 21 in the first through fourth in 21 of 38 cups.
Wow.
Starts.
In the Breeders' Cup with that kind of competition?
Yep. Yep.
And
remarkably,
70%?
it's crazy. It's a crazy number. And when you think about his mounts, his first couple of years, it was in and mostly in turf races. It's only the last couple of years that he started getting dirt mounts. And, they're the most competitive and the most, trip dependent events. So for him to be putting up these numbers and for Derek Lawson to get him 14 starters.
they have a kindred. That's a kindred spirit there. He just yanked him out of France. When he got passed over as the number one jockey, and Derek said, come to America, and I'll make you the leading rider in California, because Derek, his relatives were French, so he speaks French.
Yep.
And he convinced him to come over, and then it was under the stipulation that he brings his girlfriend, who's now his wife, with him. You know, he came as an exercise rider, so he had to go through all kinds of red tape and all kinds of paperwork to get them both into the country. And he managed to do it. So, but he just, you know, he found them in France and just convinced them to come. And he was, you know, he was ready to come because he was ticked off that that he got passed over as number one rider.
Now here's some of the mounts before this Breeders' Cup. He was on Anonymity, where he was third in 18. He was on Avenge in 16 and 17. He was third in 16. He won with Battle of Midway in 17.
I forgot he rode Battle of Midway. Well,
fourth with Bellafina in the Juvenile
Battle Philly. Battle of Midway is a hell of a big price.
Obviously, in the Turf Sprint, he killed me at the... That was a big price. That was a big number. Third with Paradise Woods in the Distaff last year. Fourth with Queen of Bermuda in the Juvenile Turf Sprint last year. Second with Richard's Boy in the Turf Sprint in 17. That was a price. Second with Solimini in the Juvenile in 17. There you go. Those are his board hits.
Wow, he probably thought that was going to be his big Derby horse. I think it's what a crazy year he's had, by the way. I mean, I'd written a column about how many Derby horses he went through early in the year.
He just went
through another, all kinds of crazy things. He lost the mount, and he gives up Omaha Beach, and then has a chance to ride him again, and Mandela doesn't put him on there. And you know, when Omaha Beach became the favorite for the Derby, he was like totally depressed. He wouldn't want to talk to anybody. He was so depressed over it. And he could, like I told you in the past, he couldn't care who he rode in the Derby. He says, "I don't care." He just cared about Bellafina in the Yokes. He says, "Put me on anybody. Who cares?" And he winds up on a 50-1 shot, and becomes the first good jockey to be put up on a disqualification. you can't make this stuff up.
You know what's interesting? I just pulled up the, you know, with all the discussion about the championships. On the jockey side, Irad is going to lead in earnings. Jose is second, Castellano third, Rosario fourth, and Pratt is fifth. And Pratt is fifth with the least amount of starters, which is notable. But per start, he leads per start. In earnings per start, Flavian Pratt leads the country.
It's a question whether the Eclipse voters will look at that or just, you know, do their usual mindless thing by looking at, you know, who led in earnings.
Well, and Irad wouldn't necessarily be a bad choice again this year.
Year. Don't get me wrong. Irad would not be a bad choice at all.
But looking at the kind of wins that jocks have had, the three finalists this year should be Irad, Joel Rosario, and Flavian Pratt.
I agree. I mean,
those should be your three finalists.
And remember, Flavian Pratt, he went to Canada and won the Queen's Plate on top of all that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I just hope people, whoever they choose, you know, they're worthy of it. But I just hope they do their due diligence and study this and come up with somebody other than who led the nation in earnings.
Well, the one combination that should lead to a long overdue honor on that championship front is Seth Klarman as owner of the year. And Seth is...
talk about overdue. When are they going to give it to him?
Well, this year, it might go with Bill Lawrence as they might get it together because
he's a minority owner.
He's got a very small share of it.
That's right.
I know. But Seth, you know, together with Bricks and Mortar and others, 8 million in earnings and 17 total wins, and then Seth just as Klarovich, another 55 wins and 4 million. He's Klarovich alone is fifth in those money standings and first, with the horses that he has with, with Bill Lawrence. So
How many private horses can you think of this year in any kind of races, stakes races, allowance races, that ran horribly? I mean, they're always closing. They're always flying in the stretch. I know most of it's grass, but he's done well in the on the dirt in the past. He won the Champagne last year, and he won big races. He won the Preakness. But you start looking on the grass races, every one of them, maiden races, allowance races, small stakes, big stakes, every one of them is flying in the stretch. Sometimes they get up, sometimes they don't, but they're always closing in there. Those silks are so familiar in New York. I mean, he's way overdue. I mean, he really should get it this year. Let me ask you a question, by the way. Did you see the finalists for the Vox Populi?
I saw the headline, and I saw a couple of names. I think
I'm curious to see who gets that, you know, which is based on popularity, you know, combined with, you know, accomplishment. So it'll be interesting to see who gets that. I mean, personally, I think a lock in there should be Maximum Security, who still, to me, right now looks like, you know, if he wins the Cigar Mile, I would think he would get the 3-year-old championship.
Hmm.
You would think so, but I tell you one thing. You know, I watch the Belmont Live and Saratoga Live and everything, and I see the crowds they get at Belmont Park, you know, and I see the paddock with like two people in the paddock, and I see the apron where there's three people in the apron and 10 people in the stands. And, you know, you look at it, and then I go watch on the closing weekend when they're running the Bold Ruler Stakes, and the place is packed. The place is packed, and then they're lined five deep around the winner's circle, and they're giving this rousing ovation to Maximum Security. I looked at that and I said, there's a more popular horse in the country right now, for whatever reason, whether you feel sorry for him, you know, for what happened in the Derby, or, you know, bouncing back from all his setbacks, you know, missing the Travers and missing the Pennsylvania Derby and coming back and beating all the horses, for whatever reason, you like Jason Service, for whatever reason. This, to me, he's the most popular horse in the country. I know a lot, you know, some people obviously don't feel that way. But, you know, whether he got put up or not, there are a lot of people that still consider him the Derby winner, feeling he was robbed. Whether you feel that way or not, you know, he did finish first in the Derby. And, I mean, I don't know who else you would give it to. You know, maybe there were more accomplished horses like Bricks and Mortar. But I'm talking about popularity. You know, Bricks and Mortar basically went through the year, I thought, fairly quietly. I mean, from August to November, he was out of sight, out of mind. So, you know, and, you know, people aren't paying that much attention to grass races early in the year when he won the majority of his races. You know, I mean, I could see, you know, Omaha Beach was popular, Midnight Bisou was popular. I tell you one thing. I mean, I'm on the committee, and one of the horses that I put in for finalists is Belvoir Bay. For what she accomplished after what she had gone through, I think it's a great story. But it's an interesting award. You'll see what this is. I'm curious to see how. Look, they voted for Winx last year. He's a filly that Americans never even saw in the flesh, ever. So
that's true.
So you never
that's
know
true.
When they go as famous. I guess people stay up until 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning to watch a race. That makes her popular. But, you know, I mean, nobody in this country has ever seen her unless you went to Australia. You know, but she won it. But, yeah, it's been won by interesting horses, before, obviously deserving horses. Rapid Redux won, and Painter won, and Mucho Macho Man with his story, and obviously American Pharoah and California Chrome. It was a good mix of horses. But I'm curious to see how they work it this year. It'll be interesting. I mean, to me, it's Maximum Security, but based on his popularity and his accomplishments. But yeah, I guess it's awards time now.
Yeah, almost. We know there's plenty of racing. We got the Clark and Cigar Mile and
we'll see who comes back in that Los Al Futurity.
That's another. That's going to be another interesting. We'll see if, particularly after Lafitte and I, tried to urge Peter Ertin to think about it with, he could pull a take charge Brandy, with Storm
right,
McCoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Well. Yeah. Well, I mean that year was even more wide open than this year's 2 year olds are. So I mean, at least you have other horses to vote for this year, and the race is still to come. Like I said, you got the Kentucky Jockey Club and you got the Remsen. So if any of the big horses win those, and you've got Tis the Law still sitting
that's
out
right.
there with a monster champagne victory.
And he, to his credit, to Barkley and Tis the Law's credit, they're immediately after Storm the Court's win, and then Saturday in whispering, just the conversation that comes up in the aftermath. A lot of people said, "Well, I guess Tis the Law really elevates now," and people, for a horse that was out of mind for a large stretch after Saratoga, and we kind of had to wait for his return. He made an impression. So you're 100% right about that.
Well, not only that, but I think his connections should be rewarded for sticking to their guns. When they said he's not running, they mean he's not running. You know, when you start changing your mind and you don't have anything planned, Shug's, and I don't know whose idea it was to change. I don't know if it was Shug's or it was Farish's or whatever. But, when you got a gut feeling right after a race, sometimes you got to stick with it. You know, sometimes you run in races, you have no choice. Omaha Beach, you think they really wanted to run the dirt mile? No, I mean, they had a choice of three races, and he really didn't fit in the other two at this particular time in his career. So they ran in this race, and he gets beat. But it's not a race they normally would have run in.
No. Steve, let me. I've got to take a break because our kitchen cabinets are being delivered, and I just got to tell these guys where to go with them. All right.
Okay.
So let me take the break. And speaking of Australia, Dick Powell's going to join us to talk about what went on in the Cup, in the Melbourne Cup. He's gone a few different times, and we'll never bring up the
that was.
Yeah, well, it's crazy.
Ooh, what a finish.
I finally got to see the replay. Let me break, though. The guys are looking for me to sign the receipt, and I will. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Steve Haskin. Back after this, everybody. Dick Powell.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sun on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Open up your heart, what do you feel? Open up your heart, what do you feel? Is it real? Yeah. The Big Bang may be a million years away. Oh. But I can't think of a better time to say.
Thanks for holding on. Yeah, I had to run down. And I could see the guy was standing. It's raining here, too. The guy put him in the garage. And, been waiting. We're overdue, obviously. I've been talking about this kitchen remodel since the summer. And, the timing never goes as smoothly, but now they're here, and so the guys can start to do it. We got people coming for Thanksgiving. Today's the 5th or the 6th. Today's the 6th. So Thanksgiving's 3 weeks from tomorrow. Is that enough time?